Good morning and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 9 a.m. on September 21st, 2021, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding our meeting remotely today. With me is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Commissioner Tony Olson, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerks of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. This session is for the Board and CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues amongst ourselves and with PUD staff. If there's a public request to comment and time remains, 15 minutes will be allowed at the end of the briefing session. So I'd like to start out this morning and ask everyone to join me in a moment of silence to remember Christy Erickson, a district custodian who passed away this Saturday. Thank you. So first on our agenda this morning is our general manager briefing and study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners, on this beautiful, sunshiny fall day. We just have one item on our updates, and that's our legislative update. And we have Kim Johnston and her amazing team available to answer any questions.
Questions, commissioners?
No, not yet.
Okay. Thank you. I read the report. I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Excellent. So first up is an update on our electric fast chargers here at the PUD Electric Building headquarters. And Susie Oversby. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning.
And David.
Good morning, commissioners. So yeah, we are here. I'm Susie Oversby, Senior Program Manager in Energy Services, acting as the grant manager for this project. And Dave Popach is here, Senior Design Engineer in System Planning and Protection, and he is our project manager overseeing construction and installation. Let's see. I am trying to advance the slides. There we go. Thank you. So we are here to give a very brief update on the project and some developments on the timeline. If you're driving down California this morning, you will see we have not yet installed the chargers. When we've been to you in past presentations, we were optimistic we would have them installed this summer ahead of any grant obligations. But we've made some adjustments to the design or in the process of doing that. And that's adjusted our timeline a bit, but we are here to assure you that they are coming soon. So just briefly kind of where we are to date, what's happened to date. So we came to you initially in December of 2020 with an overall briefing of the project and an introduction. Came back again in June with Brian Booth with a proposed electric rate that you approved so that we could charge customers for the electricity that they'd be using when charging at the stations. So thank you for that. Dave oversaw the installation of a new transformer in the spring, as well as purchased and we've received the two chargers, and they're in storage waiting to be installed. So we are well positioned to move forward as soon as we have a design that we are happy and comfortable with. So we were in the process of designing the project with a third-party consulting consultants and then realized that the design we had was not in full compliance with American with Disabilities Act, the ADA guidelines. And so we paused and took a step back to, first of all, try to determine how the guidelines apply to a project such as this, one where we're installing chargers in a public right-of-way. Dave will elaborate on this, but we did not find examples, local examples, or many regional examples to look to. But this also gave us a really, really good opportunity not only to step back to make sure we were checking that box, but to ensure that we were building a project that really is something that all of our customers, anyone from the public who wants to charge at these stations, can do that and do it comfortably. I want to extend kudos to Doug Wilson and Robert Reed in facilities for providing some in-house consultation on ADA and accessibility issues. So we're really grateful for that resource that we had here. So I'm going to turn it over to Dave Popach now, who will provide a little bit more detail and context on the design updates.
Thanks, Susie. As she was mentioning, upon discovering that our design could be improved, we looked into other EV charging sites, and we learned that a lot of sites were not considering ADA guidelines, and there wasn't any examples we had found of electric vehicle charging on a public right-of-way. I'm sure they exist, but we were not able to find any to use as example. We were able to get some guidance from City of Seattle, ChargePoint, who's installed many of these sites, and also the California Building Code, which is ahead of us, to ultimately identify the areas where our design could be improved to meet both current and future ADA guidelines for EV stalls. This has been a great learning opportunity for our team, and we feel confident in moving forward with the project. Some specific additional ADA guidelines that were found as needing improvement are identifying an accessible route to the building, maximizing the accessibility of and around the charging units, and designing the stalls to include 2% or less slope. So the impacts the additional ADA guidelines have on our project are design changes resulting in a flush curb for accessibility and repaving to meet our slope guidelines. We're also bringing on an architectural firm with expertise and background in complying with ADA guidelines to take lead on the project and coordinate the design changes. Although this pushes back installation to December of 2021, we're very happy to take a step back and ensure that the chargers will be accessible to all of our customers and the public. We're still comfortably meeting all of our grant deadlines. We met an updated ecology on the project, and there were no concerns or impacts from that perspective. Are there any questions? That's all we have for today.
I have none.
Questions, commissioners?
I have this, Commissioner Olson. I have one question, and we're going to be discussing this in greater detail later this afternoon. But I'm curious: are you experiencing any shortages or inability to reach the to get the suppliers and the materials you need to complete the project?
No, we actually already have the chargers at the electric building.
Okay. And that would be the primary.
That is. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for all of your good work on this. It's exciting. I'm just very happy with this project.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susie and David.
Thank you.
Right. Great job, Susie and David. Next up is Mo Matthews with the Snohomish County PUD and Northwest Fiber Ziply Joint Pole Agreement Extension. Good morning, Mo.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Mo Matthews, Manager of Joint Use and Permits. I'm here to discuss extension number 5 for our Joint Pole Agreement. And I presented a year ago for amendment number 4. Okay. So so a little bit of background. We have had a longstanding agreement with our joint owner. More recently, this contract was from 2009, and that was with Verizon. And we have had four amendments to this specific contract. More recently, amendment number three and number four were extensions to the contract. And that was primarily because Northwest Fiber, who is also Ziply Fiber, was taking ownership from Frontier Communications. So we have been in active discussions with Ziply this year. And also discussing with district staff. We've actually spent several months going line item by line item with our peers at Ziply and discussing the, you know, the contract, the history, as I know it. My peer there really didn't have any background. The language in this agreement from 2009 really goes back to the 1960s. So what we've realized is we really need to bring this, the contract language, into the 21st century. And we want to make sure we have all of our line items addressed and finalized with Ziply. We want to make sure that the district's needs have been met. And so that's why we're asking for this extension in addition to rewriting the agreement. And this current amendment, our contract expires September 30th, next week. So we are, I am here today to propose extending the agreement for one more year. This would be amendment number five, and it would then expire September 30th of 2022. Due to it expiring late next week, that is why I'm here this morning. And then also again this afternoon for resolution authorization. And are there any questions?
Questions, comments, commissioners?
No.
Ms. Commissioner Olson, having been around since 1901, I have a good appreciation for what you're dealing with. And this commissioner hopes that you'll stick to your guns and not sign a new agreement until the utility becomes whole on it.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. I do hear you. You actually made these very similar comments last for the last amendment, and I have relayed this to internal staff. So it's something we definitely want to make sure that the district is left whole. And we don't give up anything that we feel that we need to keep.
And I have another question related to this item. I was just thinking it's important that we maintain good relationships with our partners, but is there any circumstance where one can, or is there any benefit to perhaps bringing in a third party? Neutral party to help in those discussions?
So right now we're not quite there. Now we've done this first level of us communicating with our peers at Ziply, and we've kind of had that first stab of what we think we want the changes to be. We at our side have talked internally with construction and with engineer staff. So we're looking to finally detail some of those things. And then we'll need to bring it up with our legal team. And then it'll be that go back and forth with Ziply.
To determine, okay.
Yeah, so we're not there yet.
I was wondering if we had that option.
Yeah, I'm sure we probably do, but I hope to not need it.
Oh, me too. But you know, the longer the inequities pile up,
yes,
continue to pile up as we continue these extensions. I'm not being critical of how difficult it is. Just an observation.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that you know what we're going through on this.
And I guess my only comment is I'm glad that we're at the table with them and we're having the conversation because it seems like it's been really stalled out for a couple of years just from the amendments we've approved. And so thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think you're doing better than the State Department and the Treaty with Canada.
Thank you very much.
Maybe we can loan her out, huh? Yeah.
We got to get this done first. Thank you,
Mo. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Mo. So next up is Kevin Johnston with an update on our broadband access for PUD customers. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, John. I am going to make sure I can indeed control this presentation. So let me see if I can advance, and indeed I can. Okay, now that we've made sure the technology is working, I'm happy to be here this morning to present an update. As a follow-up to the last time, we talked about our broadband study, which was back in February of 2021. Myself and the broadband leads are assembled here on the line this morning to provide an update as to our efforts over the last 6 to 8 months since we last spoke, and what the way ahead might look like as we look into early 2022. So just as a refresher, why is Snohomish PUD studying gaps in broadband access? And really it comes down to magnified inequities brought about by COVID-19 and our associated economic and other lifestyle restrictions, and the need for reliable broadband to engage in commerce, education, telemedicine, telecommuting really was highlighted as being more important than ever. Even prior to COVID, customers, elected officials, community leaders, and others in the Snohomish County and Camino Island area have indeed requested that the district explore potential partnerships to bring enhanced broadband service to the community. And then finally, as noted, initially, really it was the convergence of the inequities from COVID-19 that brought it to brought it to the forefront that we thought it would be prudent to begin to educate and study the issue of broadband in our region for ourselves, with the goal of informing district leadership about what the broadband space looks like, in our current economy and society, and also, if there's an opportunity for the district to potentially responsibly engage in bringing some sort of remedy to the inequities that have been observed. So that is kind of the stage setting for how we embarked on this study. Moving forward, with a little bit of a timeline, it is kind of where we are here in roughly the second stage of the study, where we are engaging outside expertise. And I'll, in the coming slides, discuss how we got to a point in our study where we are working with an outside consultant. But if you'll remember back to around July of 2020, when we initially brought this forward, from July 2020 through roughly July of 2021, so about a year's worth of effort, was primarily focused on gaining an internal understanding of the factors that affect broadband within our service territory. As part of that, we wanted to develop objectives for what a study might look like and accomplish, identify key internal and external stakeholders, collect internal data from our own records and and the experiences of our internal staff experts, and then really use that as a lens to begin to envision what outside expertise might bring to enhance our internal understanding. So that was really spent a bulk of a year putting those elements together, which then allowed us to transition into the second phase of the study, which is where we are now, in which we are actively engaging outside expertise. And the goal of that, of this portion, is to harness the experience of the consultant, who is Magellan Advisors, and we'll talk a little bit more about what they're bringing to the table in greater detail in forthcoming slides, And really what we're trying to do here is enhance our internal understanding with their external data and expertise in this area, and work alongside them. So I just, you know, as a point of emphasis, we are not giving the study over to the consultant. The consultant is bolstering and enhancing our efforts on this study. So we are in active engagement with the consultant. They are providing insight and expertise and data, but our internal broadband team, our broadband leads team, remains firmly, you know, at the helm, guiding, you know, where the study is going and really what we want to get out of it. So the next phase is going to be to develop an evaluative framework for analyzing those key study findings, so that when we have the findings delivered from Magellan, we are ready to take those and analyze those against a known evaluative framework of key decision-making points. And we will be back to share those principles for decision-making later this year as the study progresses. And then, of course, to discuss those challenges, opportunities, and strategic priorities for defining and ultimately culminating and presenting findings to the ELT and the commission sometime in early 2022, with the goal being to educate and inform district leadership of feasibility, options, and risks. And it's important to note that the culmination of this study will not be a recommendation per se. There will be a collection of information and data points and a discussion of, as it says here, feasibility, options, and risks. But our goal is not to present a final recommendation as to whether or not offering broadband service in the future would be a viable option for the district. There will be analytical elements that are explained in the report, but I think it's important for all leadership to understand that there will very likely not be a bottom line recommendation that says broadband study team recommends, you know, yes to proceed or no to not proceed. It will really be a collection of analytical framework, which will frame further discussion so that leadership can come to a conclusion about what fits with the district's strategic direction in the future. Happy to pause for any questions.
Questions, commissioners?
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. I would like to know what you're doing in working with the Washington State Broadband Director's Office. Apparently we passed a bill providing quite a bit of money for his program. And I don't know if it was through the PUD or where, but I saw a presentation that he did, and I think it was PUD. He was very, very, you know, really activist. He was just ready to go and had the money to do it. And he was appointing what would you say, representatives in all the areas of the state, every county, I think. So are you working with them? Are you benefiting from their services?
In answer to the first question, are we working with the state broadband office? The short answer is yes. So through various channels, whether that be legislatively, you know, through district staff such as Clark McIsaac, you know, and his work down in Olympia, we do have channels of communication open with the broadband office. And also through our government relations work, Brenda White is actually the representative from the district to the Snohomish County Broadband Action Team, which is the instantiation of those kind of county by county representatives that you were alluding to, Commissioner. So the state broadband office has established broadband action teams in each of the counties. Local organizations such as ours have representation on those teams. In this case, Brenda is our representative to the Snohomish County Broadband Action Team. We are also, we tend to turn up in the same places is probably a good way to put that, right? Many of the presentations I attend or workshops I attend or members of the other team attend, we run into state broadband office officials quite regularly. We're hearing what they're saying. They're hearing what we're saying, as well as the rest of the community. So I think that the information is is flowing. We also understand, and I'll bring this a little closer to home, that at our stage of the study right now, we're answering high level macro scale questions about feasibility options and risk. We are happy to have their information, data, input to define options for us in the future, but we're not at a stage where we would be approaching them with more concrete details, plans, for what we might want to do concretely in the future, because as you see on the slide, that's what's coming in early 2022, in which we bring our study findings back to this body and the ELT and ask for, guidance, frankly, on what the direction of broadband is going to be for the district and our community.
Thank you. Are you saying that they don't have expertise to provide to us? I mean, we're hiring outside people, right? Let's see, where was that? Yeah, we're hiring consultants. And I was wondering, isn't there expertise and information that the state director's office might have, or is it necessary for us to go outside of what we already paid for as taxpayers?
The answer is kind of a yes and. Yes, they have information and expertise, but there's a limit to what they, I think, that they could provide to us, or what we might want them to provide to us, as part of a kind of a separation of duties and powers and responsibilities that we would like. In the drafters of this study, the broadband leads team, John, Kim Johnston, Dean, as we sat down to discuss where this study fits with our strategic priorities, we wanted to take firm ownership internally of asking questions internally, conducting our own analyses under an analytical lens that we frame for the good of the district and our service territory. The State Broadband Office has a lot of data, and they have a direction and a vision, and I think you alluded to it in terms of saying that they are kind of highly action oriented, and they do certainly promote taking action in the broadband space. So that is an element that they are a key stakeholder, but there are many other key stakeholders, and we want to ensure that we're not only listening to one key stakeholder. But we're allowing their information and their expertise and their desired end state to be part of a larger analytical framework. So we absolutely are aware of the State Broadband Office. We have communications with the State Broadband Office. We take information and expertise as provided to us publicly, or in rare occasions, maybe directly to us. But really, the focus of this study is to holistically analyze all of the factors, functions, and stakeholders that are key to Snohomish County and Camino Island, not the entire state of Washington. Mm-hmm. Okay. That would at least be my, kind of high level response as far as our level of interaction with the State Broadband Office.
Thank you. I want to make sure we're exploiting the services of our own state to the extent that we can.
So I do think, and I just want to make sure that we're kind of respecting kind of both sides of what the State Broadband Office can offer to us, right? As part of the Department of Commerce, they're kind of nested up under the agency that could, should we provide, to potentially enter this space and desire to enter this space, then we would be talking about exploring potential funding options, right, that could come from Department of Commerce, right, as part of the state at state level funding effort. Mm-hmm. So State Broadband Office kind of is a dual role agency here, right? They have information and expertise on one hand, but they're also a potential funding conduit. I want to respect both sides of that, right, but treat them differently. That it's premature at this juncture to be exploring concrete funding opportunities because we have not yet made a commitment one way or the other to enter this space. We are collecting information and understanding what the funding options might look like at the state and federal level, as well as potential actions for bonds and those types of other internal funding opportunities. But those are forming kind of a menu of options that we can explore and choose from should we answer yes to the high level question of this is a service that we would like to provide to the community and something that we would choose to enter into.
Okay, thank you. I think one thing that the state might be able to provide along the way is looking at what's being done in many some other places and what their experiences have been. And you're probably already doing that.
Absolutely, both internally and externally. So a fundamental part of this study, and we'll see in forthcoming slides, is choosing a partner in Magellan Advisors that has worked closely with many organizations and agencies across the Washington state and Oregon. So we specifically wanted to have consultant expertise that allowed us to harness either directly or indirectly the experiences of others. And even prior to that, we had a fairly robust outreach effort to peer PUDs that are in this space as well. And our outreach continues as we learn more and our analytical lens sharpens and focuses and we're better able to ask questions of our PUD partners. We can do so and say, hey, you know, we'd really like to explore business models or funding options. How did you get there?
Right.
What did you do? And to the larger question about State Broadband Office, they are a key stakeholder in that area, but there are many others. And going directly to the source, I think, is really important as we engage our outreach partners.
Right. Thank you.
Thank
you. This is Commissioner Olson. I do have a couple of observations. And some of the, I'll go quickly over some because they mirror Commissioner Wolf's questions. One is, something that it's linked to the timing of this, and it may be close to when the board might have formal discussions on rates, general rates. And I don't know the timing of that, but if the timing of presenting the board with some decision is close to that, my concern is that that could take emphasis away from the good that this is and linking it to, well, I'm gonna have to pay more money because somebody up north wants broadband. Now, I don't know if that's an issue, but it's something that first came to mind. Also, for the consultant, I saw the consultant and has worked extensively with state PUDs. And I'm hoping that you are seeing with the consultant that they don't have a mindset to mirror what many of those PUDs are doing. And the reason I ask that is they don't have a major supplier in their areas right now. Many of them are really largely not served with broadband. So I just want, we have a little bit of a different challenge in that we have some very clear areas, but I wouldn't want it to, I'm concerned that we focus on that and we don't open up a new program for everybody. And Commissioner Wolf spoke to grants, and this also, I hope, of course your board will probably be a cause of this. There's work going on now with munis and other public agencies, the state, on a possible structure or a possible cooperative agreement. And I wouldn't want us to lose the opportunity that there might be a good option there. And my concern is they are, I think, a little ahead of us. And could we lose a partner, a really potential good partner? So that's, you know, I'm not concerned. These are just things that came to mind. And the grants, the money, federal money, state money. We got to have, I know, the need board approval, need to say, okay, we're moving forward with this in order to submit a grant. But I really, really, really hope we don't lose opportunity there, particularly since we are considering this, I think, as a new business line. So I really support Commissioner Wolf's questions and comments on that. I think that's, let me see my notes. That's all I had, thank you.
So Commissioner, I think you've alluded to two high level principles that we've used thus far in this study. Number one is that we are very diligent and very proactive in terms of being aware that Snohomish County is not the same, and the challenges and the socioeconomic structure and the urban rural split Snohomish County is not the same as many, really any of the east side counties, right? So the east side PUDs, which have been in this space for a long time, 20 plus years now, provide a model. They are a reference model, but they are not necessarily the only reference model. And we have reached out to other peer PUDs and agencies around the state and are using, you know, both our own connections, but also state broadband office and the consultant to round out those connections to make to form and create a collection of what potential business models might look like. And whether that be, wholesale only, wholesale retail, what potential grant funding might, where it comes in, internal, external, who owns what, who leases from what. These are all internal considerations for structuring the business model. And there are many different ways to structure that. And so our hope is that we can present a potential menu of options, right, and potential courses of action, so that concerns such as exactly the ones that you raised, that were, you know, Snohomish County is not the same demographically as many of those other counties, so that we don't fall victim to potentially just implementing a service or business model that becomes an improper fit. That just because it worked somewhere else doesn't mean it works and fits in Snohomish County. And that is something that we have been very diligently attentive to since day one.
Thank you.
Just one other thing that came to my mind. Some time ago, I think it was in the first year of my service here, we had a presentation from Whidbey Broadband, and I'm wondering, are they still in the picture? Are you working with them or talking to them at all? Because they wanted to talk to us about providing service to our territory, and they felt that they would be a good choice, but I don't know where we are now in terms of, I do remember that they have had a lot of success on Whidbey Island, and they seem to be to think at that time that it might be a good fit. So I mention it just so that we don't totally forget that they are a potential provider with whom we might work.
Absolutely. And as you'll see in forthcoming slides, a key outcome of the study is to categorize and catalog and understand what the provider space looks like in the county and on Camino Island. We as part of the initial part of the study, understanding private and public sector offerings and what potential partnerships might exist, and investigating and analyzing at a very high level with nothing concrete, no promises made or assurances given, right, what potential partnerships might exist for future action should we make a decision to proceed. And we're very diligent about couching all conversations that we have with potential outside partners in the language of potentiality, so as not to provide the illusion that we are further along in this process or that we have made a conclusion to proceed into this space. Because as we've discussed many times here, we have not made that decision, that there is an equal likelihood of not proceeding as much as proceeding. And when we have conversations with partners, whether they be external, public, state, federal, local, whatever they may be, we are very diligent about continuing to drive that point.
Thank you. In your next life, I think you should be a professor. You do such a good job of presenting.
Professor, Kevin, go ahead.
To tack on to both Commissioner Wolf's and Commissioner Olson's questions and comments and observations, can you talk about or weave into the presentation who the members of the BAT team are in our county and what they're bringing to the table? And I guess I'm specifically wondering, is everyone looking to us to ultimately solve this problem, or are there other in the county working on their own solutions to the challenge?
So I will provide some preparatory comments, but at the same time, I'd like to ask Brenda to join the conversation here. So while she's button clicking, I will provide my initial response. The Broadband Action Team is broad-based. It's led by the Snohomish County under the auspices of the State Broadband Office, which we discussed previously. My impression of the state or of the Broadband Action Team is that it's broad and diverse. I don't believe, I mean, to answer your more pointed question about whether or not we are kind of being looked at as a leader or as the kind of de facto leader, that is not my sense. Nor have I seen anything that would allude to other organizations waiting to see what the PUD does before they take action. So I believe that it is that many of our peer organizations around the county of similar size and resourcing are at a similar phase. The county, without getting into specifics, because frankly, I don't have those specifics, but I am aware that the county is undertaking a study that is probably very similar to this one, but that's about as far as I could confidently go in terms of describing what the county might be doing.
Thank you.
Brenda, are you on?
I am, Kevin. I would just add that we've had but one meeting. The Broadband Action Team for Snohomish County is one of the newer ones. So there's been one meeting or perhaps two, but it is a broad group, you know, largely 40 plus stakeholders throughout the county. And to answer the question, as far as the lens on us, no, we're a stakeholder.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. This Commissioner Olson, sorry. Something that came to mind with what Commissioner Logan said, I really hadn't thought of it, in terms of those looking to the in the county to a public agency whose charter is to provide this kind of basic service to our customers, but sometimes we forget it's at cost. So I think I would agree with where the team is headed, is we're there to listen, not there to grab on, to take leadership in whatever construct within the county, but that the board needs to look at all of that and that possibility. But before, I would hope that discussions with other entities in the county get too far down the line thinking that Snohomish is the logical lead without Snohomish having some time with the team to determine if it is the best business solution at a price that these folks can pay. Just an observation. Commissioner Logan really raised a very important issue.
Absolutely. And from our perspective on the team, that is definitely something that we're aware of and attentive to in terms of ensuring that we are, as Brenda stated, a stakeholder amongst many, but not falling into becoming, as I said, kind of a de facto lead. So I think that your concerns are absolutely valid. And we're maintaining our what we consider to be our proper place in the discussion with other organizations that have potentially similar or maybe differing goals and interests. So I would like to move forward, at least to describe the next portion of the presentation, which is how we chose through the RFP process to work with Magellan. And then the second phase is really a collection of what those study outcomes and deliverables will be, many of which we've already discussed during the in-depth Q&A that we had on the previous slide. So at a very high level here, back in, we spoke to you in February previously, in preparation for releasing the RFP in March of 2021. And we did so with the focus being answering key questions regarding access to broadband for unserved and underserved communities across our service territory. In response to that, or as part of that RFP, we asked the following key questions, which are, what are the risks and opportunities related to broadband? Why does a gap in broadband accessibility exist? What is the scope of the problem? What models, as we alluded to previously, potential business models and other models exist to address the digital divide? What do current and emerging technologies look like? And what would engagement in any form or one of many forms mean for our existing customers? So we're retaining a customer focus throughout this, understanding that in the end, what we're desiring is to responsibly engage if possible and desired, to serve the needs of our customers and community. So as part of that, we received, or in response to the RFP, we received 6 written proposals that were evaluated by district staff, broad and diverse district staff, which were sourced from many departments and work groups across to ensure that we were not falling victim to any one kind of key stakeholder analytical lens and position. So we analyzed those 6 proposals on the following 5 areas, which are ability to meet the district's requirements, proposers' past experience with desired services of the study. So, not desired broadband service offering, but desired services of the study, quality of proposed resource and work plan, proposers' financial viability in terms of being a reputable organization that has, future staying power, and of course, pricing. Based on our initial review, 4 consultants were invited for interviews. So we, from the written review, we removed 2 consultants from potential consideration and invited 4. After a comprehensive RFP review and interviews, in some cases multiple interviews, Magellan Advisors was ultimately selected as our district partner because of their clearly demonstrated depth of knowledge across the major focus areas of this study, meaning that this is more of a high-level analysis and a feasibility study, talking about risks, opportunities, and potential challenges, as opposed to more of an engineering-focused study. So Magellan clearly stood out from the rest in terms of being able to provide a broad and diverse set of services across a equally broad and diverse business functional analysis in terms of providing needs and gap analyses, operational considerations, and limited engineering scoping, and then, of course, fiscal impact and funding. As we've alluded to, they've had a a lot of experience, recent experience working in Washington State with public entities in similar demographic settings to Snohomish County and Camano Island. Diverse knowledge from a team of experts. So it was a deep bench. So if somebody were to leave the organization, we didn't feel like we would then be left, consultant list, so to speak. So we wanted to have a input from a team of experts, great access to a wide array of data sources to proxy for a lot of considerations such as affordability. And then finally, and most importantly, a well-structured work plan, inspiring confidence that they would complete their work to a high quality standard within the desired timeframe and on time. For a fixed price contract of $69,300 total. And once again, it is fixed price. So that is how we came to be working with Magellan Advisors. I'll pause for any questions on the RFP and consultant selection process.
Questions, Commissioner Olson. Magellan, are they based, will their team or advisors come out of Denver? Looks like that's where they're based.
So in our experience thus far, so we're actually working primarily with their Los Angeles office. So it's a coast-based, as a national organization, the consultants, in our in our meetings with them, they are scattered all around the country.
Oh, okay.
They have a remote model. All of the services will be performed remotely. We will not be doing any on-site work, 100% remote. And we have expertise coming in from Washington, D.C., Georgia, Bay Area, and as well as local expertise as well.
Thank you. When I saw fixed price and I saw that they didn't really have anything in the state, I was thinking, I hope any travel is in that fixed price, but that's a non-issue now. Thank you.
No worries. Anything else? Great. So we'll just move into a description of what the deliverables of the studies are, what the final deliverable is, and then that will be, we'll wrap up the presentation and we can take any more questions. So at a high level, study deliverable is gaps and impacts. So on the gap analysis side, Magellan will identify unserved and underserved locations. It's important to note that unserved and underserved has both a technology aspect, but also an affordability aspect. And you'll see that alluded to in forthcoming bullet points, but we're looking at where infrastructure is, but also where it is relative to socioeconomic considerations such as affordability. So it's technology and affordability and equity overlaid and mixed to determine, and we get to define this for ourselves, what unserved and underserved is. So we want to provide identification of where those areas are, and then build a comprehensive broadband map to illustrate how the district service territory is currently served by broadband. So that's the infrastructure. And then better inform district leadership on areas that are most in need. And the need aspect incorporates considerations such as, and then we move to the next box in terms of impact, access, and affordability, right? And these start to define need. Population or projected population growth and shift, impact to current sectors, residential, commercial, manufacturing, and economic development, access to and promotion of access to education, remote education and telehealth, and then of course, promoting an innovative regional economy, remote work, workforce development considerations, which is closely linked of course to education, quality of life, quality of place, and then just as an umbrella factor, public safety, could potential expansion in broadband service enhance public safety, and considerations of economic development and tourism. So from an impact state, we're looking to identify areas of greatest need, which factors in both technology and economic considerations. Cost and funding. We've talked a lot about this morning. The intent of this study is to provide an overview of potential technology options. No commitments are being made to what technology. We have extremes in technology options, right? We can do all in the ground fiber infrastructure, all the way from to the the cable or the router in a person's home, right? That's fiber to the premises, right? Then there's some wireless options and there's extreme wireless in terms of all wireless. We're considering everything in between for, as an analytical option to provide high level consideration of what the art of the possible looks like. So we're not making any commitments at this point to excluding technologies or definitely moving in a given technology direction. So we're just trying to collect all of the options so that we can present to leadership what those options look like and how this space might be served in the future through either a commitment to one technology or a mix of many technologies. And of course, an overview of the scope, scale, cost, technologies for what that might look like. As part of that, there will be a theoretical conceptual network that is developed on paper. And that is really to focus the analysis of things like scope, cost, and funding. So we're going to use a notional network as a way to focus what potential infrastructure costs and deployment timelines and other operational considerations might look like, understanding that that is largely a theoretical and academic exercise at this stage so that leadership can understand what the scope and scale and size of this undertaking might be. In terms of funding, identifying potential funding strategies, are there joint build opportunities with local peer partners? Can we leverage strategic partnerships? And then investigate outside funding sources at the local, state, and federal levels. We've already been in a couple of meetings with the consultant, providing them with our local, and state and federal, perspective as we see it. And then they will provide their expertise for what they understand as potential funding options at the local, state, and federal level as well. Through that, we hope to be able to craft and present to leadership a rough depiction of the funding ecosystem for what these partnerships or funding opportunities might be in the future. Market analysis, gain an understanding of service offerings currently available in Snohomish County, and these are largely private sector partnerships, and then work with local internet service providers to understand their needs. And when I say their needs, I'd like to provide a little point of clarification here that what we're looking for is to understand what their plans might be for a private sector partner to expand service, to expand infrastructure. Private sector organization to what their plans might be to expand services. And that then allows us to determine what they might need, which then flows into a high level assessment of whether or not we have an opportunity for responsible engagement in a partnership with that organization, or whether or not that would prove to be negatively impactful for the district, right? So here is where we kind of start getting a little bit more focus on what is the private sector doing? What is the public sector opportunity here? And can those two mutually, become mutually beneficial over a long term? And so as part of that, we would investigate opportunities for partnerships, public-private, public-public, whatever those might be, and then gain an understanding of potential joint investment for broadband infrastructure. All of this is theoretical, notional, academic largely, and would form the basis for if we were to decide to proceed, how we would structure additional engagement with these organizations in the future during a follow-on and more detailed study as a potential outcome of our high-level decision to proceed or not proceed into this space.
Kevin, a few years ago, the city of Edmonds went through a process like this in determining how to provide broadband to the community. So you might want to connect with them and find out what they went through, what they found, what they're doing. I get my services from a private provider, but I think there may be people getting internet through the city's broadband services. I haven't researched that, maybe I should, but I'll leave that to you if you want to talk to the city of Edmonds. Maybe there's some other cities too.
There indeed are. Yeah, there absolutely are. And we're aware of those cities. We're aware of Edmonds as well as other cities outside of the county that have successful municipal-based broadband programs. They're not identically, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison between a potential offering from a PUD and a municipality, but it's very similar. A lot of the opportunities, risks, challenges, et cetera, would be similar, and we have identified those as potential opportunities for this type of market-based discussion, business model considerations, those types of things. Okay.
Good.
This is Commissioner Olson again. Are you now really sad that you brought this presentation to us? We're into this thing. Your second bullet on the left, in terms of engaging with the private sector, I also think I'm very, very pleased to see that, because what they don't know about what we're looking at and studying, they will assume something, and their bottom line profit. So they may say, well, are they going to compete with us? Which is kind of, they haven't served those areas because it's not profitable for them. But anyway, make them aware, even initially, so that you don't end up being, they end up being open to discussion.
Absolutely. And I think you bring up an excellent point, is we want to understand their plans, their needs, from both a physical infrastructure, standpoint and other potential, opportunities for us to maybe responsibly engage with them. But we also want to communicate where we are to avoid assumptions of competition, retail head to head, like, we're going to try to take them on in their, in their market right now. So we want to have those open conversations to avoid creating an overly competitive environment based on improper or poor assumptions of our organizational goals here. So I think we're meeting those, I think we're meeting that goal. We have had, in our discussions, limited discussions with private sector organizations, we found them to be largely open, largely, constructive, heading towards what we consider to be an appropriately mutually beneficial, potential end state, understanding that all of this is couched in the potential that we are only doing a feasibility study and that no decisions have been made. So we always are very pointed to put that disclaimer on all of those discussions, but we do want to try to understand what their plans are.
Thank you.
And in terms of shifting gears into market comparables, we talked about this earlier in terms of a robust outreach that is either directly or indirectly brokered by the consultant, but will become part of their report of a market comparable business offering or set of market comparable business offerings for public utilities, ports, government organizations, similar entities that may be providing similar services. And really, this is an opportunity to learn from others about how they structured their business internally and externally. And these are just points of comparison. Any sort of detailed analysis in this area would need to be subsequent to our high-level decision to proceed or not. Legislative opportunities and challenges. Really, the opportunity here is to gain an understanding of opportunities and engagement with State Broadband Office. So we already have engagement with State Broadband Office. We talked about that previously. But what we're trying to gain a little bit more understanding of here is opportunities and challenges of the evolving legislative environment at both the state and federal level. So that we can understand impacts of the things that might impact grant funding opportunities or potential mandates of service. I mean, that would be an extreme scenario. But as things begin to evolve in this space federally or at the state level, we'd like to understand how the consultant sees the evolution of these things. And then, of course, we have a fantastic team of GR experts here that, the broadband study leads group works closely with to understand and include their expertise and their insight as to how, you know, this would affect us legislatively and regulatorily in this space. So I think this is a little harder to define because we're talking about moving targets and shifting goals and priorities. But I think that, you know, we have a good opportunity here to understand how these large scale legislative and regulatory changes might impact the district. And then ultimately culminating in early 2022. So sometime, you know, let's say February, March 2022, final deliverable of opportunities, risks, and challenges report, with the goal being to educate and inform district leadership of feasibility options and risks for responsible engagement in Snohomish County and Camino Island broadband space. We're looking to include all of the aspects that we discussed here. So customer input, emerging technologies, private sector, public sector, costs, funding, potential business opportunities, partnership assessments, all of which will be, all of which will move to painting a picture of what the broadband space looks like in our service territory and what potential options for responsible engagement might look like as we make a decision to proceed or not in the future. And this is the final slide of this presentation. Actually, I'm sorry, I have one more, but we talked about this in great detail earlier. We'll be back in sometime in fourth quarter of 2021 to present the analytical framework so that we can kind of, begin to define an analytical lens for culminating and presenting findings in quarter one of 22. So that is our proposed way ahead from whence we've come, our work thus far with the consultants, how we got to work with them, and the deliverables that we are looking for as a broadband study team. That brings us to the questions slide. If there are any high-level or open-ended questions, the team and I are standing by to take any and all and address.
This might come into the category of open-ended, but for customers, for our customers, if they, well, maybe this is premature at this point, but if they don't want broadband, will they also have to share in the cost of the program?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There are people who don't want broadband more and more. They don't want social media. They want it just, you know.
I think a pointed answer or a specific answer to that open-ended question, I think, I would not want to hazard that at this point. I think there's a high potentiality, depending on how we structure the program, for that to be the case, but there's equal potentiality maybe for that not to be the case based on how we structure it. The good news is we're in control of that. That we see we can make decisions about our business model internally and externally. This body is empowered, you know, from my understanding to, you know, direct a lot of those decisions in the future, which really is the firm basis for why we want to bring these considerations forward and why we're doing this study, so that we can educate and inform the ELT and the commission, and then a decision can be made on those types of considerations, opportunities, risks, and threats.
Right.
Any other questions, commissioners?
No, I just want to say to you and your team, good luck.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We know this is a large undertaking, and I do want to make sure that I highlight the other folks on the call who have been listening in the background and maybe even sending me a note or two off to the side. So myself as the overall broadband lead, but Brenda, Gordon, Jim, Mark Rawson have been leading a fantastic team of professionals down below them that are bringing to bear their internal experience, expertise, the way they see things. This is not an easy task. It's very high level and very complex at the same time, right? We're talking about very high level strategic things, and we're also talking about very tactical considerations of infrastructure deployment and all that. And putting that together, these folks have done a fantastic job. I want to give a bunch of credit to them for getting us to where we are today. And I'm very excited to continue to work with them as well as leadership as we come to a decision point here in the next 6 months or so. Thank you very much.
Well, I just want to say, I'm so glad we're doing this work. And wow, what a challenging work. You know, we we talk about broadband, it's pretty mature, really. It's been around for a long time. It really started out as entertainment, and now it's considered an essential service. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the big challenges I see is risk, economic risk to the organization, even risk to the customers as to whether they'll get a service from us or from someone else that's really going to be acceptable to them. I mean, you know, Commissioner Wolf mentioned cities. And of course, you know, the public power model is to take the cities and the rural areas and the different economics of serving both and putting those together so that all can be served. And, you know, that's a challenge. I imagine Commissioner Olson mentioned the for-profit companies. I imagine they're expanding into areas that are profitable, areas that a nonprofit could use those revenues to help offset the rural costs. So I just see it's a very challenging problem. It's sort of fascinating how we got here. We really got here, you know, from decisions government made more than 20 years ago about how broadband got treated. I will say, I'm not sure if we have any public on the call or not, but we do allow others to use our polls for things. So other companies that want to put in broadband service certainly use our infrastructure, and we do for a cost make that available to them. So it's not like we're an impediment to broadband deployment, but anyway, it's a fascinating conversation. I'm really glad you guys are doing this, and it looks like we've got a great team to do it, but not easy. And I think the other thing that's going to be interesting as we go forward and make decisions is it's really going to be looking at that risk. I mean, there's a risk of new technologies making what we might do obsolete. And how to moderate that risk, right? Are there, you know, there's interest in the legislature. Are there agencies that are willing to help assume some of the financial risk to bankroll deployment in especially the rural areas?
Sorry to prolong this, but I'm just reminded that we approved, I believe, the Darrington Broadband, or it was like a citizens group that formed a nonprofit up in Darrington or in the Darrington region. So do they have reliable broadband now to that area?
This is Mo Matthews again with the joint use. We did implement the Darrington Internet Users Agreement. Mm-hmm. They are going to be installing a type of microwave dish at our Eagle Ridge Telecom Tower. Mm-hmm. And that is to help with the lack of broadband up in Darrington. It has not been implemented yet, but that's something that they're hoping to help. It's not quite as reliable as possibly, you know, wireline attachments. But it is something that they're actively trying to get in their community.
Thank you.
Again, Commissioner Olson, wishing to prolong. Kevin, your presentation today and looking at the team that's been pulled together, you have increased my confidence tenfold in the structure of the project and the quality of information that I think the board will get back. So I'm very, very impressed.
Thank you very much. And I know the rest of the team is on the call, so I'll speak on their behalf. We appreciate your support. And we're looking forward to ultimately, you know, presenting what that deliverable is and being able to engage in that discussion about what the options really do look like in this space. So, you know, we'll have another 6 months or so of good hard work, and then we'll hope to be back with an opportunity to begin to discuss what the future might look like in this area. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day. I agree with Commissioner Olson. You guys are asking all the right questions and taking a fair and unbiased look at it. And it'll be fascinating to see what you come up with. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job, Kevin. And we do have an all-star team that is on this project and doing great work in space. So are we ready to move on, Commissioner Logan?
Yes, unless anyone would like a break. I think we're ready to move on.
All right, next up is the redistricting project or process with Ann Spankler. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. Looks like I'm in control. That's great. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Again, Ann Spangler, general counsel. I have a set of slides here this morning on responding to the 2020 census. Just as background, we had a small team that got together more than a month ago, I think, to talk about, and then including government relations, the commission office, Brian Booth, talk about whether we wanted to just bring data or wait and actually bring you a proposal for redistricting. So what you're going to see today is an actual proposal. 10 years ago, this process was very non-controversial. Commissioner Olson may recall. We didn't have a whole lot of public comment. So it made sense, since the changes are really pretty minor to the district, to go ahead and show you a proposal, which of course doesn't foreclose going back to the consultant and having an alternate drawn up as well. We can easily do that. But just for purposes of today's discussion, we're bringing you a proposal. So I was going to go through briefly what the process looks like and the requirements again to refresh your memory, show you the proposed districts, and then we can go through the population numbers that we got from the consultant. I have been using the consultant that does all the school districts in certainly Snohomish and parts of King County, and a lot of other special purpose districts. So he did it for us 10 years ago and this time as well. So let me go back here. The legal requirements, every 10 years we are required to examine and make adjustments if necessary to our commissioner districts. So are the counties, municipal corporations, special purpose districts, et cetera. We have a public process requirement where we have a public hearing at least 1 week before we adopt a plan of redistricting. And then we need to publish notice of the public hearing for 2 weeks beforehand. The criteria for the districts, as nearly equal in population as possible, that's the primary criterion, as compact as possible, geographically contiguous, and then the population data can't be used to favor or disfavor a racial group or political party. And then boundaries should coincide with natural boundaries and preserve existing communities of related and mutual interest. Of course, none of those terms are actually defined in the statute. So here's the results of the 2020 census compared to the 2010. We added 116,317 in population. You can see much more of it was in District 3, 22.1%. District 1 is up 12%, and District 2, 13.8%. The redistricting goals that we went into the proposal with were balancing the population is the main one, preserving some of the natural boundaries. I'm thinking I-5 and 405, for example. And then unsplitting a couple of existing split precincts, mostly in the Lake Stevens area. That makes it a lot easier for the county to conduct the voting. So I visually depicted the current commissioner districts. This is a plan that was adopted in 2010, showing District 1 at the north, 3 to the south and east, and 2 to the south and west. And in the next slide, before I show you the proposed districts, the changes include unsplitting 2 precincts in Lake Stevens, moving a little bit more of Mukilteo from District 1 into 2, and then the first district including a little bit more of Lake Stevens to the southwest of the lake. Lake Stevens is already a community that's split between districts 1 and 2, and then balancing the population. here you'll see the proposed districts, and if you could see my cursor, there's a little area in yellow to the southwest of Lake Stevens that is now in District 1, and there's a little pocket of Mukilteo close to the water that's now part of District 2. And in order to show you a little bit better what that boundary looks like, I included a couple of detailed slides. And again, I will show you, this is the current boundaries. And so there's an area south of Lake Stevens, and then more of Mukilteo that is in District 1. And when I go to the next slide, you'll see a little bit more green in that Mukilteo area and a little more yellow southwest of Lake Stevens. So those are the only changes that were made to the districts. And so I can go through the population numbers, but I'll pause here to see if there are any questions.
Yeah, I have a question, and this is truly a question that I have no idea what the answer is, but did District 2 lose part of South Everett?
No.
Okay, I just wondered.
Not to my knowledge.
I remember that part of
District 1 has lost a little bit of Mukilteo, but right. I don't believe that the boundary has changed for South Everett.
Okay, thank you.
And that's certainly a question I have a really detailed set of maps that I can forward to the commissioners if you want to see them, where you can zoom in and actually look at them. We can certainly do that in advance of the next meeting, but I think it's primarily Mukilteo and Lake Stevens.
Thank you, Anne. Yeah. I would appreciate those links.
Okay. I'll make sure they get to the commissioner office so they can go to all the commissioners.
Thank you.
It certainly makes sense to unsplit precincts.
Yeah.
And it actually seems like Lake Stevens now a little less divided. Or it's divided, yeah, but it's sort of divided by regions. It was sort of the outliers, how it was sort of chopped in half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good observation. It is a little less. So I'll move on to the summary data of population. And again, this is the 2020 census data. You can see here the ideal population if we divide the districts equally, and then the total population that we have in this proposal, we're off by very small percentages in terms of the ideal. Mm-hmm. So between 0.01% and 0.03. And then I've provided for you the summary of the ethnicity data here. There's a lot more detail on the next page. So I'll just go ahead.
That was really interesting. I was surprised to see that District 2 is the most ethnically and racially diverse.
I think that's not a surprise, given, you know, you've got Linwood and mm-hmm. Edmonds and, part of Bothell.
Right, but District 3, let's see, which one is Tony's in 3? But
3 is to the south and east. I'll go back to the...
Right, but it includes Mill Creek, right? And Mill Creek has really exploded in terms of, I think, the Asian population.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the boundaries between 2 and 3 include 405 and I-5.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the boundary between those two.
Right, and of course, Linwood has a lot of Asian people living there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let me go back to the population data. Mm-hmm. But here you're seeing the distribution of, this is the information that came directly from the census, where you have white, Black and African-American, American Indian and Alaska Native, Asian, Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander, other is a category, as us two or more races, and then Hispanic, mm-hmm. Of any race, Hispanic origin. Mm-hmm. So these are a little bit more balanced when you look at those than when you're looking at the summary data.
Excuse me, any race. What does that mean? Hispanic. So Hispanic, I mean, some are what we would call Black and some are Latino.
Right. I don't make these categories up, unfortunately, so I'm not sure I can explain them, but it does distinguish between race and origin right. in this data.
So I remember right. when I was very involved with language education, I would go to conferences and we would be reminded that, hey, there is no place called Hispania, so we shouldn't use that word. So, you know, they preferred that we, or the people who were working especially on that, said we should say Latino or Chicano, or, you know, be a little more specific instead of saying Hispanic. But you didn't decide this, but it's interesting that they did decide to lump it all into one category and call it Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Anne. Bob's got his hand raised, so I'll allow him to talk.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll introduce Bob Schweitzer as the consultant who helped prepare this proposal.
Hi, guys. I decided to pop in and take a look. A little bit of South Everett did get changed. It just cleans up that area of the line there. But in regards to the Hispanic population, Hispanic is a subgroup of the five main categories. You can be white and Hispanic, you can be Black and Hispanic, you can be American Indian and Hispanic, Asian and Hispanic. And so Hispanic is not a number that you would add back into the five main criterion totals, because then you would be doubling some of the counts. So Spaniards are classified as Caucasian. Jamaicans might be classified as Black Hispanics. Does that help you with your question, Commissioner?
Yes, it does. You know, I mean, yeah. My bias is that racial distinctions like that are very unfortunate.
Well, this is a very political subject that you broach. So unfortunately, the Census Bureau has their politics being controlled when it comes to these things. And so we just must abide.
Right. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. I really appreciate you providing that clarification.
I'm here for you, Anne.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's pretty much the proposal. This is the next steps in the process. Unless you have a request that we do something different, we will come back with a resolution on October 4th that will set a public hearing date of October 16th. Then on October 16th, we would present the proposal again and then bring it forward for adoption on November 2nd. As Bob reminded me, the state did extend the deadline for completing this work, but if you do have a commissioner up for election in 2022, we have to complete the process by December 31st. So that's why you see the schedule that you see today. Any questions?
Questions, commissioners, comments?
Nope, I have no more.
Direction?
I have nothing.
This looks like solid work to me. This makes sense. It's logical, I think, how we've moved things around. So I'm satisfied.
It's amazing Great. That we got the census done, given the conditions under which we were operating during that census taking period. I mean,
right.
It's probably a little bit under what the truth, what the realities are, but that's what we have, and so we go forward with it.
Yep, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Anne. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Anne. That concludes the GM report for this morning, for briefing.
Okay. So we do have time for public comment. If anyone would like to speak, please, or provide public comment, please indicate you'd like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if you're using a phone today, dial *9. Looking and I'm not seeing anyone wishing to speak. So it is now 10:28 and our meeting is recessed. Our regular meeting will reconvene virtually at 1:30 p.m. Thank you.